a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 151 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for March 2026. We have an interesting month's worth of Apple news. On the one hand, no massive stories like the giant new MacBook Neo last month, but nonetheless, quite a lot happened, so let's get stuck in. As usual, let's start with a few quick updates, and I'm going to get the unpleasantness out of the way first. A few little updates from Trumplandia. The president's special military operation / undeclared war / not quite sure what we're calling it in Iran is directly affecting Apple, rather to my surprise. Iran has warned Apple, well, all the major tech companies, but that includes Apple, that given that the president of America has been attacking their civilian infrastructure and threatening to commit what are technically war crimes when you bomb civilian infrastructure, they, if that happens, they will consider Apple's employees to be legitimate targets in nearby countries. And then Apple did bomb some civilian infrastructure in Iran and said, yeah, you are a target. So, yeesh. And Apple is continuing to move more manufacturing to the US, or to support manufacturing in the US in this case. They're not moving anything of their own, but they have added two new partners to the American manufacturing program, which is totaling $4 billion investments to Bosch, Sirius, Logic, TTK, and Quinti Electronics between now and 2030. Speaking of the MacBook Neo, done with the unpleasant stuff, on to other follow-ups. Speaking of the MacBook Neo, we have some fun with numbers without numbers from Tim Cook. Apparently, they've never seen as many new buyers on a product launch. Whether that's one more than last time, who knows? But I guess the idea is that we do expect the MacBook Neo to draw a new audience to the Mac. And Tim Cook seems to be saying, yeah, that's happening. And I guess we'll know more in the next earnings call, but, you know, interesting. Another new product from last month was the Studio Display XDR, and one of the things people commented on was that whether you got the Studio Display XDR with Apple's own mount or with just a Visa adapter, the price was the same. Now, Apple's mounts are not cheap, so why is Apple charging the same price if they're not giving you their expensive mount? Well, Apple have corrected that oversight. You can now buy the Studio Display XDR with the Visa mount for $400 less than with the Apple mount. And Apple are refunding people who bought it with the Visa mount but paid the full price. So that is, I don't know why they overlooked that, but hey, nice to see it resolved. Google's attempt to reverse engineer AirDrop is continuing. In fact, so far, it seems to be working. Google are using it on some of their own phones, and now the Galaxy S26 is doing it as well, which is a Samsung phone. And so far, there's been no reaction from Apple. One theory is it's not technically possible to lock these other vendors out without killing the actual thing itself. Or maybe this is just tacit consent because they don't need the extra headache of more regulators getting very cranky. Difficult to tell exactly what's going on here, but for now, it is true that there are more Android devices partaking in AirDrop, and Apple haven't stopped it yet. And finally, a light-hearted little follow-up. We talked last month about NATO approving the iPhone as the first ever consumer-grade phone that can be used for secrets, or military secrets. Apple got another notable approval for the iPhone 17 Pro. In this case, the 17 Pro Max is approved to fly into space on the Artemis 2 mission around the moon. That's rather cool. And just to go back to the NATO story, we got confirmation from Apple during the month that they are not aware of lockdown mode having ever been successfully exploited. Which is, again, that's why NATO were so happy with the approvals. And, you know, NASA's approval isn't really about security so much as it is about this thing won't shatter and send shards of glass into the astronauts' faces in zero gravity, stuff like that. Anyway, you know, the iPhone 17 is doing very well for itself. Moving on to our regulatory rundown, Apple have been forced to block in-app purchases and subscriptions in Russia. They're coming under even more government pressure in Russia because they don't want to play ball, so they're being forced to shut things down instead. Apple lowered their prices in their Chinese app store by 25%, they lowered their commission to 25% in an attempt to please regulators, and that doesn't seem to have been enough because the technically speaking newspaper, People's Daily, which is sort of kind of government PR really, released an article basically criticizing Apple for being monopolists. So I guess that didn't quite get rid of the opposition. And then just on an own goal that's difficult to understand, Apple accidentally rolled out Apple Intelligence in China before they were finished getting all of their official approvals. That is not going to have gone down well with the Chinese government, so oopsie. Speaking of oopsie, the British government has fined Apple Ireland $500,000 for probably breaking sanctions against Russia. The claim isn't malice so much as, I guess, just not quite doing enough due diligence, but yeesh, very, very bad luck. Not good, Apple. I hope that gets resolved. And also in the UK, and indeed in other parts of the world, Apple is rolling out more age verification in the various jurisdictions that require it. Most notably to come with the new iOS updates was a rollout of age verification in the UK. Everyone who updates their iOS device in the UK will now be forced to either prove their age or not use the App Store. Basically, no installing new apps or making in-app purchases until you do. Apple are currently offering 4 verification options. You can scan a passport or driving license. You can use a credit card to verify because you have to be over 18 to get credit. So not a debit card, a credit card. Or if you already have a credit card linked to your Apple account, you can just use that. That's proof. Hey, look, you have a credit card. There it is. And if you had your Apple account for long enough that you must be over 18, that counts too, which is an option for old fogies like me. There are some reports that the age verification isn't working for everyone. The Mac Observer have a nice little troubleshooting guide. A lot of it is down to misunderstandings like credit and debit cards not being the same thing. And there may just be some bugs in Apple's various systems on the first few days. By the way, if you're having trouble and you're in the UK, link in the show notes at less-talk.ie. And then we learn that age verification is also rolling out to more countries, specifically South Korea and Singapore, although I have much fewer details on exactly how it's being implemented in those countries. And then finally, just to end the regulatory rundown with a little bit of a sort of a good news story. So the Digital Markets Act has caused a lot of sturm and drang, but it is having a noticeable effect. So one of the things we've noticed is that Apple is being forced to open up things to more competition, which was kind of the point of the Digital Markets Act, to stop anti-competitive behavior. And so we now have a new API that is only available in Europe, at least for now. Hopefully it rolls out further, called the Audio Accessory Kit, which allows third-party headphones to do the cool tricks that the AirPods do with the easy pairing and all that kind of stuff. So that is definitely something that I hope rolls out to more of the world. You know, Apple's innovation here is cool, but, you know, lock-in is not considered okay. And similarly, one of the things Europe is very cranky about is that Apple doesn't play well with smartwatches that are not Apple Watches, and so they're being made to allow push notifications to be sent to those other watches, or rather to be received by those other watches and displayed. And in preparation for doing that, Apple have updated their privacy rules, and they basically said, yep, you can get these notifications, assuming you do X, Y, and Z, but you absolutely may not forward them to other cloud services, use them for advertisement, a whole bunch of really, really, really good user protections. Basically, these notifications are for notifying people, not for spying on them. And I'm delighted that Apple are A, allowing competition, and B, continuing to do so in a safer way as is possible. So I think they're striking a good balance here. I can't see anything for the EU to object about. That doesn't mean the Commission necessarily won't. They're not always reasonable. But anyway, that's where we stand in our regulatory rundown. Moving on to legal latest, we have a notable story in the US. The Moosey app was kicked out of the App Store for breaking Apple's terms and conditions, and they sued, saying, Apple can't just throw us out. And a judge went, actually, no, they can. And to be honest, they can do so with or without cause. It's interesting. It's similar to, but not quite the same as the Epic case. There are some similarities in that Epic were thrown out of the App Store. But that's not the bit that Epic won on, because basically Apple won almost everything in the Apple v. Epic case. The only thing Apple lost in the Apple v. Epic case was that they were not allowed to prevent linking to outside stores. And so Epic aren't back in the App Store, because although the rule itself is considered anti-competitive and Apple have now been forced to allow external links without commission, Epic are still out of the store because Apple are also allowed to police their own store. So while this seems contradictory, it is actually in keeping with the 11-1 victory Apple had over Epic. One of the 10 that Apple won was that they actually could throw people out of the store. And the only thing Epic won is those links to external payments. Massimo also won a hollow victory over Apple. They kind of won a technical success, but the judge decided, yeah, you're technically right, but we're not going to do anything about it. We're not going to impose any more penalties and no more bans. So it's like when someone wins, say, a defamation case in the UK and get awarded one penny in damages. It's like, yeah, technically speaking, you won, but we don't think you're right. So, you know, on paper, win for Massimo, in reality, win for Apple. And then finally, we do actually go back to the Apple v. Epic case for a small update. Those fees that were the one thing out of 11 Apple lost on, well, there is an injunction forcing Apple to, or not so much fees as, well, sorry, let me back up a second. Apple wanted to allow external linking with fees and all sorts of really odious requirements on developers to report all of their sales back to Apple and stuff like that. And Apple are under an injunction to basically say, no, just let people link out. And Apple appealed. They were hoping to get a rehearing on that, and they have been rejected, which means, in effect, that in the United States, apps can continue to link out to external payment providers without paying a commission to Apple. So this is only for in-app purchases. So in-app purchases in the United States continue to be allowed from providers other than Apple without commission. Moving on to Apple HR and acquisition news. Apple have made another acquisition. They have bought Motion VFX, which is a company that do Final Cut Pro plugins, and that is being interpreted as an indication that there are new features coming to Final Cut Pro for iPad. We shall see. May just be an aqua hire, but again, that may mean new features in the various versions of Final Cut Pro. Then we have a story which sounds a bit icky to me. Apple fitness chief to retire after no wrongdoing found in bullying accusation. What I've been able to read, it's all he said, she said, of course, because I wasn't in Apple. I'm only reading the various documents and things, but it kind of sounds like there was it may not have been technically bullying, but it certainly sounded like a pretty hostile work environment, and I don't think the staff are going to be particularly sad that he's leaving. On the whole, it's probably better for Apple, as best as I can tell from out here. Meanwhile, Apple's hardware chief for Apple Home is leaving to the Aura Ring company. He's becoming their chief techie over there. And then heading in the other direction, Apple has hired former Google VP Lillian Rincon to lead the AI product marketing team. Plenty going on in Apple services and original content, so just some highlights. Apple Arcade is adding more games, as Apple's press release puts it. Apple adds award-winning hits Dredge Plus, Unpacking Plus, and My Very Hungry Caterpillar Plus, the growing catalogue of apps, it's growing catalogue in April. That's basically summarized by Apple Insider as two indie greats and a legendary children's book arriving on Apple Arcade. And if you're wondering what Dredge Plus is, that is described by Cult of Mac as a sinister fishing adventure. Interesting. Apple Music subscribers will be able to listen to complete songs in TikTok. Nice. An interesting collaboration, I guess, now that TikTok exists in the United States as a company. That may be easier. In Apple TV land, then, Apple TV have revealed that revealed the schedule for Friday Night Baseball for the first half of the 2026 season. On the one hand, this isn't really news. Oh, look, Apple does Friday Night Baseball. But it kind of caught my eye that this is Apple's fifth year doing Friday Night Baseball. This slow and steady push into sports really has been going on for quite some time. Apple are also bringing the anime streaming service Crunchyroll into their Apple TV app's channel feature, so you can subscribe through Apple TV app. Given that Crunchyroll just had a nasty security breach, maybe you're better off subscribing through Apple than through Crunchyroll themselves. And Apple did manage to win an Oscar for their F1, the movie. Not best actor, not best movie, nothing like that. But best sound, which isn't bad. And in related news, because this is all, of course, part of a big push towards Apple's coverage of Formula One, the first race that Apple were the US partners for has happened, and apparently the viewing numbers were better than anyone expected, even Apple. Again, fun with numbers without numbers, but, you know, it would appear that this sports play is working quite well for them. And also, it's not just in the US that Apple are doing quite well with their original content. Apple TV scored 15 nominations at the BAFTAs, which is the British Academy and Film Television Awards, and also another 9 at the UK BAFTA Television Awards. So that is quite a, you know, substantial recognition there in the UK. So I think, you know, that it's not just American stuff, and that is kind of nice. CarPlay, then, it is arriving in Lucid Gravity SUVs. It is also getting support for certain smart locks from Quickset. And ChatGPT is arriving on Apple CarPlay. There's a new feature we're going to talk about when we get to the main stories. And literally the day the new feature came out, ChatGPT joined the club. So that means that you can do hands-free conversations with ChatGPT from CarPlay. At least it's hands-free. I'm not entirely sure if I like the idea of chatbots while you're driving, distract the driving, but, you know, Apple do seem to be doing it in such a way that it sounds like they're thinking about safety. We shall see. Apple Wallet, then, a little update. University of Texas is getting digital student IDs in Apple Wallet. I am very disappointed that there are not more places all over the world rolling out this feature. And I don't know if that's because Apple is being too closed about it, or I don't know what the reason is, but it's disappointing to me that this isn't just more universal. I'm being very selfish, of course. I work in a university. I would love to be able to tap into things with my phone instead of having to have a bloody card. But, you know, hey, please get it rolled out more. And then finally, the Apple Sports app has got updated twice. The first update gave a bunch of new features for MLB and NASCAR fans, and also a really nice toggle to hide gambling odds. Given how toxic gambling is, it felt very at odds with Apple's clean image to have gambling odds in the bloody sports app. But thankfully, that's now something you can turn off, which is, I think, a good thing. And then later in the month, there was another update to add support for the FIFA 2026 World Cup. We have 4 main stories this month. We have a whole bunch of software updates in the Apple OS 26.4 collection. We have a little bit of new hardware in the forms of a new version of the AirPods Max. We have a new business program for business customers around the world. And then we mark Apple turning 50 years old. Quite significant. So, first main story, those Apple OS 26.4 updates. Given how much Apple's OSs now have in common with each other, it's probably not a surprise that there are a whole bunch of features that don't really belong in a description of any specific OS. They're just more generic. So the first thing to note is what there isn't in these updates. No new Siri features. We do have one Apple Intelligence tweak that we'll get to later, but nothing Siri as such. We also get support for the 8 newly approved emoji across the board, even on the watch. And we also get some new... Well, actually, we get the new video podcast features that we were promised last month in a press release. And a nice little tweak to people who have set up family accounts in iCloud and stuff and on the App Store is adults can now have their own card. I'm delighted about this because obviously kids can't have credit cards, and it's a feature, not a bug, that when kids buy managed purchases through a family account, it's coming off the family credit card. But when there are two adults in a family and they have their own credit card, it's really annoying that every single sci-fi book I'm not interested in, my darling beloved buys, ends up on my credit card. And now we can just split that out. So long overdue, yay. Also, some common features that only exist between the Mac and the iPad. So they don't make it onto the phone because they don't really work on small screens, but they are shared between the Mac and the iPad. And the first of those is new compact tabs option in Safari, which I have heard good things about. I haven't experimented myself, but I have heard good things. And also the promised improvements to the Freeform app for Creative Studio subscribers are included in this update. Diving in then to iOS and iPadOS 26.4, Cult of Mac have an excellent overview linked in the show notes for all of the little details, but I'm just going to pick out some highlights here. Two more abilities to tweak Liquid Glass, or two more tweaks to Liquid Glass, I guess. So the first is there is a whole new option you can choose to toggle on to reduce brightness effects. And also the existing reduce motion option has been tweaked a little to be a bit more effective. We also get that one Apple Intelligence feature. Apple Music playlists can now be automatically created using Playlist Playgrounds. And I kind of thought this would be an across-the-board update, but it's not on the Mac. It's only on the iOS and iPadOS versions, which is interesting. Maybe it'll come to the Mac soon. iOS 26.4 then adds the ability to basically have a one-tap widget for the ambient music feature, which is, if you rely on that ambient music, that's a really nice little feature. And that's kind of it, really, of note. Like I say, full list in the show notes, but that's kind of it of note. If we move on to the Mac then, again, Cult of Mac have a lovely overview of all of the features. Less going on here, to be honest. One of the nicest things is that, especially for countries where you have chargers no longer included, where you basically bring your own charger and keep it for many, many computers, when you pick the wrong one and try to charge your laptop off a little iPhone charger, you will now get a warning. So macOS on Apple laptops is smart enough to say, hey, do you know you're charging awfully slow here? You probably want a better charger. So that's a nice little feature. And also warnings have started to appear when you launch a Rosetta 2 app, warning that Rosetta 2 is going away. Now, it's not going away immediately. It's still going to be supported in macOS 27. But after that, it is going away, which means no more Intel apps on the Mac starting in macOS 28. WatchOS, very little of note here. One fix that has made a lot of people very cranky has come to pass. So when they redid the workouts app, it used to be that you started a workout by scrolling to the workout type you wanted and clicking the giant big icon, pretty much the full size of the screen, showing a picture of the workout. And then with WatchOS 26, that became a tiny little play button that was always difficult to tap and that you always missed. Well, now you can click on either. You still have the play button if you want, if you've gotten used to that, but just click on the giant big icon and that works too. And that is making a lot of people very happy. It's a small thing, but a very annoying thing. And this is the kind of attention to detail that Alan Dye was terrible at. And this is the kind of stupidity that I hope goes away now that he's sodded off to Meta. Fingers crossed. Sorry, VisionOS is next on the list here. The only real change here is VR streaming capabilities. So you can do demanding spatial apps. Basically, you can have the brains happening on your NVIDIA RTX graphics card on some device on your network, and then you can stream that straight to the Vision Pro over your network using NVIDIA Cloud XDR protocol. That's kind of cool. And similarly, then, GeForce Now can be streamed at 90 frames per second to the Vision Pro, which is also pretty darn cool. And tvOS just gets a little bit of a cleanup. There is a Genius Browse feature, which might be interesting, but mostly it's old legacy iTunes stuff cleaned up. And then in related news, Apple have released their first ever background security improvement. So these are little updates to the iPhone and the Mac that shouldn't require a reboot. and that get pushed out automatically unless you've turned that off. And it's a way for Apple to do really, really urgent but small fixes without having to wait for a full software update. And that's been in the works for a while, and the first one actually shipped now for real. It was fixing a fairly nasty vulnerability too, so that was a good thing. But also, Apple started to be proactive about people who are still on older OSs, telling them, hey, your phone is like well behind on patches, and there's a known exploit. So this relates to the Dark Sword exploit chain that came to light this month. So that is interesting that Apple are becoming even more proactive, prodding people going, not just is your phone behind, so you're hypothetically exposed to danger, but there's actually an attack out there that you're vulnerable to. Main story number two, then, is the new AirPods Max 2. Same price, same shape. To be honest, everything physical about the device is the same, although it might be in some new colours now to think about it, but on the whole, pretty much the same device. What's changed is its brains, mainly the H2 chip instead of the H1 chip. And without putting in new speakers and hardware, Apple have still succeeded in giving substantial improvements to the active noise cancellation and to the audio quality by doing clever things with that chip. The product received a lukewarm response, and so Apple actually did one of those things where they let their execs talk to people and basically explain the cool, nerdy coolness of what's going on in here. So there's a link to that in the show notes. And it is kind of interesting how much improvement. So they're saying 1.5 times better active noise cancellation without new hardware. It's kind of cool. And like I said, the prices stayed the same, so it's just a little refresh, really, but it's nice. And also, it's not the only headphone news. There is also a new custom version of the Beats Pro 2, a special edition from Nike and LeBron James. So that's in the Beats brand. So the third main story is that Apple have announced Apple Business, which is a new platform for device management and ads on maps. So this is how Apple described this new feature. Apple Business combines built-in mobile device management, business email and calendar services with custom domain support and a powerful new option to reach local customers. The powerful new option to reach local customers is, of course, the ads in Apple Maps, which Apple describe as, quote, beginning this summer in the US and Canada, businesses will have a new way to be discovered by using Apple Business to create ads in Maps. Ads on Maps will appear when users search in Maps and can appear at the top of the user's search results based on relevance, as well as at the top of new suggested places experienced in Maps. Apple will display recommendations based on what's trending nearby, the user's recent searches, and more. Ads will be clearly marked to ensure transparency for Maps users. So, just to be clear here, the service as a whole is available worldwide, 200 plus countries, which is like Apple's current Apple Business Manager and Apple School Manager products. But the ads in Apple Maps is US and Canada only, coming this summer. So, yay from my point of view. John Voorhees over at Mac Stories, actually, that's actually the main link I have in the show notes. He does a good analysis of all of this, or summary, shall we say. So we're just going to quote a little bit from John here on the two main points. On the device management side, Apple Business lets companies manage employee onboarding and devices, centralizing control over email, calendar, iCloud backups and sync, support and other company information while separating company and employee data. Platform also allows companies to distribute apps to employees. And in terms of the Maps, John adds, Apple also notes that the ads on Maps protects users' privacy, preventing advertisers from seeing their location or tracking the ads they see. So my take on all of this is that it sounds like a business version of iCloud Plus combined with the existing features we get through Apple Business Manager and also Apple School Manager, which are managed Apple IDs and managed purchases. But one of the big things that Apple Business Manager is missing is that Apple Business Manager lets you plug in third-party mobile device management. So when you set up Apple Business Manager, you use Apple Business Manager to create managed Apple IDs, and those Apple IDs can only work within your company's stuff, and you can choose what features are and are not available to your managed Apple users. You can choose how much or how little iCloud space they get and all that kind of stuff. And then the current Apple Business Manager product lets you connect to a commercial mobile device management service like Jamf or Microsoft Intune or think it's Samsung Knox, I think is the one that they offer. But now Apple are going to do their own built-in mobile device management. So basically, if you're a small business who doesn't really want to go with the Google Apps or whatever that's called this week, Google Work, I think might be the current branding, or Office 365 or something, then this is kind of a sort of a full-on Apple offering where you bring your own domain, create mailboxes for your staff, you give them managed accounts so they log into things using their managed Apple IDs, a bit like giving them an account in Office 365. They can use calendar email, they get an iCloud drive, you can provision apps onto their devices, you can enroll their devices into your company management so that you have company policies applied, which may be required for auditing, the ability to do remote wipes, that kind of stuff. And then, like I say, you centrally purchase apps and publish them out to your employees. So, kind of thing that's useful. The larger companies are going to be sticking with the bigger vendors, but for smaller organizations, not a bad option for Apple to give this just directly. Lets you buy it all from one vendor instead of having to pick and choose bits and bobs. Simplifies things. So it's certainly an interesting thing for Apple to do, and it does show that they haven't quite given up on the business market. So, I, you know, apart from the ads, which I think is a terrible idea, but hey, look, that's Tim Cook's Apple services first. Got to get that services revenue in. But, you know, on the whole, it sounds like a pretty good product to me. Sounds like a nice little update. And then we get to our big final main story. Apple turns 50, because Apple was founded on the 1st of April 1976, and I'm recording this on the 5th of April 2026. Apple has some official celebrations. So Tim Cook published, the ball sort of kicked off with the Tim Cook open letter earlier in March. To be honest, it was quite nice. It's linked in the show notes. It's not long. I suggest you have a read. I'm not going to read it out loud because I hate reading out loud. But it's actually quite a nice letter. Quite heartfelt, I think. Well written. Apple then announced through a press release a whole bunch of worldwide events with really quite a strong artistic focus. So in Apple's words, in the coming weeks, Apple and its global community will celebrate the company's 50th anniversary, recognizing the creativity, innovation and impact that people around the world have made possible with Apple technology. That translated into an Alicia Keys event in New York City. A K-pop band, Cortis, made an appearance in South Korea. Tim Cook popped over to China for a concert by Lee Yu-chun. France held four events in their Champs-Élysées store with a focus on fashion and music and content and stuff as well. Mumford & Sons had a big concert in London. And in Sydney, the Opera House was literally covered in artwork by local artists done on an iPad. It was gorgeous, and that was kind of cool. And if you're curious what all this looked like and what the feel of it was, Cult of Mac have a lovely overview of these various events with plenty of photos. So that is linked in the show notes at less-talk.ie. But those worldwide events were like the appetizer for, on the eve of the big anniversary, Apple holding their own giant big event in Cupertino, which was an invite-only event, not a public event like the other ones were. And it was headlined by Paul McCartney, no less. Kind of impressive. Well, there's lots of nice photos. It looks like it was a fun evening for Apple guests and employees. Notable is that we have some reporting that Scott Forstall was spotted there. So it seems that some hatchets have been buried, and even people dating back to the Jobs era were welcomed back for this 50th anniversary, and seemed, based on some of the photographs that have been shared on social media and stuff, seemed to actually have a fun time. So I think that's kind of nice to see that. Apple released a press release with their own overview of all of the various public events. So that is linked in the show notes at less-talk.ie. So Apple took over their own homepage then on the day itself with a lovely Picasso-style animated video showing line drawings in pretty colours of their most iconic products. It was actually very nice. And John Gruber has a link to the video directly. The whole page looked lovely, to be honest. And then Tim Cook also sent a letter to staff. So not a public letter like the first one, but a letter to staff. And again, it was nice. It was felt genuine. You know, sort of the best of Apple reflected in that. And then Apple also opened a private exhibit showcasing some of their historic products for their own staff in Cupertino. So that's also quite nice. the Apple execs then went on a bit of a media tour. We had Tim Cook did a very fun video conversation with Ben Cohen of the Wall Street Journal, where Tim Cook took Ben into the Apple archive and they looked at some fun documents and prototypes together. And then Ben had some fun little deep dives into the various newspaper articles about Tim Cook himself. It was a very fun conversation. The least guarded I've ever seen Tim Cook, if I'm honest. The Eddie Q did an excellent interview on the TBPN podcast, where he was really quite frank and open about his various, you know, bits, a lot of stuff about sport and about the App Store and stuff. But it was a good interview, good conversation, really, rather than an interview. And then Tim Cook also provided a lot of excellent quotations. He actually was a sit down during the launch of the MacBook Neo that formed the basis of a review article, not really about the MacBook Neo, but about Apple as a whole, that appeared in Esquire. Good article. The Tim Cook quotes are not really the main focus of the article. They're peppered throughout it and they're interesting. And he did say some really quite interesting things, and they did press him quite a bit about working with the Trump administration and stuff. And to be honest, it was actually very good. So if you're interested in that part of it, the Mac Observer did a summary of just the Tim Cook quotes, which are also linked in the show notes. And then finally, there were some unofficial celebrations. So David Pogue hosted an absolutely excellent event at the Computer History Museum. And the video of that is published online, like the Computer History Museum always do. So that's linked in the show notes, and that's fabulous as always. And then the Mac Observer took Apple's cool, fun artwork that was in their various press releases and things and turned it into very nice wallpapers for Macs and iPhones if you want to do that. So on the whole, you know, Apple don't usually do the looking back thing, but they did quite a bit of it for this. And it's actually one of the things Tim Cook said in his various interviews, that, you know, while they don't like to look back, and Steve Jobs really never did the whole looking back thing, and that's still Apple's culture, on the whole, 50 years seemed worthy of marking. And so they did. And I think they did a pretty nice job of marking it, all in all. Finally then, let us finish the show with some quick stories. Apple Mac Studio deliveries are now delayed by up to 5 months due to the RAM shortage. Boo. Not happy about that at all, but not Apple's fault. There isn't RAM. AI, bloody AI. Apple also pulled the plug on its high-priced, oft-neglected MacBook Pro desktop, as Ars Technica put it. Given that support for Intel Macs is literally going away, that's not surprising. Although, actually, sorry, they weren't Intel anymore. But it was a device that was just, with the Mac Studio Pro existing, it doesn't have a purpose anymore, the Mac Pro. So no one's really surprised it went away. I don't think it was a big seller. If you desperately want one, they are still available, discounted on the Refurb store. And the new AirTags 2 got a firmware update which makes them a little bit easier to detect. They basically tweaked the noise the speaker makes when it's in you are being stalked, I'll help you find the stalker tag mode. These safety features are fantastic, and the fact that they're continuing to be tweaked is a good thing. Apple is also continuing to make more of a push into social media. They have renovated their social media presence with @HelloApple on Instagram. And they've also joined Bilibili and LinkedIn in preparation for WWDC. Those are sort of dev-related places. Apple also scales up its partnership with Save the Music. That's a student music program in NYC. And then we have two dates to put a pin in. Q2 results will be reported on April 30th. And then that WWDC I mentioned. It will happen in June, as usual, from the 8th to the 12th. It is going to be pretty much all online like last year, but with a special event in Apple Park that you could get into with a little bit of a lottery. So the developers that won in said lottery are being notified. And then we also have some other developer-related news that broke this month. So developers get a whole bunch of new performance metrics and a really major update to their Apple Connect dashboard. Apple will show basically if an app is officially classified as a regulated medical device. So if you have an app that matches to a properly certified device, that's now going to be clearly marked in the store. That's good for developers of the, you know, who go through all this trouble of getting regulated and certified. That's good. Also good for us, the consumer, to know which is certified and which is just playing it by ear stuff. And Swift 6.3 brings official from Apple Android support, making it easier for the developers to build native apps beyond Apple's platform. That's that. I expect that might be quite a session at WWDC, diving into cross-platform development in Swift. Quite a stretch there from Apple. Interesting. Well, that brings us to the end of another month's worth of Apple news. I have been your host, Bart Buschatz. I hope you enjoyed the show. There are detailed show notes, which basically are a giant big list of all of the links that have informed my thinking on this month's Apple news. That's a lot of stuff. But, you know, like I say, you may find it useful to dive in a little bit deeper on the various bits and pieces. These are what I would say are the stories I've found the best of the various bits of reporting on Apple for March 2026. This show is entirely free of ads, as you probably noticed. You've made it to the end. There has been no ad. There were no sponsor breaks. Nothing like that. Nothing of that kind to cause me conflicts of interest. I get to give you my frank and honest opinion. And the show is 100% listener supported, so the bills are paid by you fine folk who support the show, and I thank each and every one of you who is or has ever supported the show in any way. It is genuinely appreciated. We are approximately breaking even, a little bit below breaking even, still not at panic stations, but you know, we are still losing a small amount of money every year on the show, which I don't mind soaking up for another few years. But it would be nice if we broke even. The two best ways to support the show are on Patreon and by one-off PayPal donations. So the Patreon is a monthly contribution, which really helps me pay the bills. And the PayPal one-offs sort of fill in the gap for the Patreons that don't quite cover the cost, and also allow me to make one-off hardware and software purchases as and when needed. You will find giant big buttons to help you do just that, to support the show, at letstalk.ie. The nicely revamped webpage, by the way, if you haven't been there in a while, it's a lot nicer than it used to be, so I do hope you're enjoying all that work I did in January. Okay, that is enough of me. I have been your host, Bart Buschatz. You can find me at bartb.ie. And until next time, happy computing.